Siren Radio.
Excellent. That's what it's all about. Now, when you actually saw the running order for today, which actually was the running order for last week. No, only kidding. We just left October the 4th on as opposed to October the 11th. And besides, dear listener, why would you be interested in that? You don't see the running order. You just hear it. Becky, you were particularly intrigued by Gabriella Peralta from Gibraltar. Let's face it, you know, that we worked so hard on that, and I waited years to actually get a suitable person to actually, you know, come across from that fine part of the world, and it did thrill you, did it not?
It did, very much.
Exactly. So no pressure, Gabriella, but this is the moment that not just the general listenership of Siren Radio and other areas have been waiting for, but Becky Morgan Phillips has got a lot riding on this particular one. What's the weather for Lincoln going to be from Gibraltar?
Okay, so the weather for Lincoln today is highs of 21 degrees centigrade, lows of 11 degrees centigrade. It will be a fresh, breezy day with sunny intervals.
Live from Gibraltar, with or without her faithful friend Frodo, it's time for Gabriella Peralta on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition.
Hurrah! Of course, it's fair to say, Becky, you're probably unaware of faithful friend Frodo.
Yeah, I'm assuming it's a pet.
Dangerous assumptions.
He's not just any ordinary pet, though, is he?
He has his Instagram account. He's already getting excited because it's a matter of 20 days, 20 Gibraltarian days before the Halloween Frodo costumes will be emerging.
And then once that comes, it will be Christmas next, and there's a lot to look forward to.
It's just amazing. So what is his state of consciousness, please, Gabriella?
He's asleep. He couldn't get up from bed this morning.
Yeah, well, you know, it's the way forward. That's the important thing.
Yeah, it's a dog's life.
Nicely done. Cliche, but, you know, we expect no less from a quality journalist. Gibraltar Chronicle, what things have you been getting up to with them this week?
Well, this week has been, I'm sure you know already, because it's been all over the UK press as well, so it's been World Mental Health Day. So we've had a lot of mental health news, I think, this week. Today we are also celebrating the 100th anniversary of independence for Czechoslovakia. So, when it became the Czech Republic and Slovakia. So that.
Can I just dial back there slightly? You are in Gibraltar, are you not?
Yeah.
So what are you doing celebrating celebrating a Czechoslovakian or Czech Republic issue?
I think they're just the ambassadors have just come to Gibraltar and were just holding like a little nice independence anniversary do.
Come to the monkeys.
Yeah, I think.
Yeah, well, who would have thought it then? Obviously, a little alliance there being developed, which I was unaware of.
It's not sunny there at the minute, I reckon. Is that why?
Because they brought the Czechs in.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's why it's raining. First day of rain we've had since before summer started. Actually, no, I lied. There was one in September.
Well, clearly, on that basis alone, you have to turn around and say, no, let's not base our entire diplomatic realpolitik on the routine of people bringing rain and so on and so forth. Actually, Gabriella, wearing your journalist hat, would you like to quiz Becky? Not to be confused with, any other Becky that's actually around there. Sorry. For some reason, I've always said it's Becky Wilson Phillips. It's Becky Morgan Phillips. Wilson Phillips, of course, is a band who actually were made up of people there we are, you see. So we will be connecting with them for various ways, shapes, and forms, but it's Becky Morgan Phillips. Anyway, Gabriella, do you want to quiz Becky on how she's found being an undergraduate at the University of Lincoln, reading the awesome topic of communications and public relations, now that she's actually 3 weeks in? No, exactly.
3 weeks.
And from South London. And was unaware of Lincoln, apart from, I believe, the flying...
The tanks.
The tanks, yes. And they weren't flying, actually, at the time. So, yeah.
No, the tanks don't fly, do they?
It depends how hard you throw them. those superheroes, they get attacked.
Like
whoosh!
Tanks,
exactly. It depends on the weight of them. It could actually be inflatable tanks. That's often
be a
been
new
used.
Thing for the army, invent flying tanks, which are also known as planes that shoot things.
I can see that you are cooking with gas this morning, Gabriella. And again, the next 4 minutes, I'm sure, will be joyously packed with perceptive questions that you can now put to Becky on her first ever Morning Edition show. She has done two evening shows. We had hoped she'd be with us last week, but she's psyched herself up. And as I said to Ben, I had a good feeling. Did I not say, Ben, before I actually decided to burn my hand with scalding hot water, I said, I got a good feeling about this.
Yeah.
Less of a good feeling after that.
Yeah, exactly. You had no feeling at all, in fact.
Exactly. It's the way forward. Anyway, over to you, Gabriella.
So how have you found Lincoln for the first few weeks that doesn't have as many tanks as we'd hope?
It's a lot quieter than where I'm used to. I think that's the main thing I've had to get used to, is just how quiet it actually is. Obviously, I'm from London, so everything is busy all the time. There's noise all the time. So that's one of the main things. And also the bus system is basically non-existent here. So that's another thing.
But you don't need the bus too much. You can just walk everywhere.
Exactly.
I don't like walking.
That's the beauty of Lincoln.
Exactly. You've got a hill that's steep, you can walk up it, and you can walk down it.
Or you can get one carriage train that's not seen in any other part of the world.
Oh, that was so baffling to me. When I stood at the level crossing and saw it, I was like, that's just the carriage. It's just one carriage. What's going on?
Exactly.
It's offsetting the huge, long, elongated freight trains that tend to pass through and go on and on forevermore. Sorry, Gabrielle, it's your interview. Carry on. Keep on going.
No, I liked the one carriage train thing. I think I've been on one before, from Lincoln. But how have you enjoyed it? Even though it's quieter, is it like a nice quiet, or is it just been like I didn't realise that parts of the UK were just so much smaller and more quaint, I guess, Lincoln's that?
I feel like everything that I know about small towns and quaint towns comes from things like Emmerdale. So I came with this like perception of what Lincoln was going to be, but it's very interesting here. I don't know. I really like it. I've been like going around and seeing things. Everything's just very close quarter. Like literally everything's in the high street or up Steep Hill, and then everything else is far away. So that's weird.
Hey, look, we got things to look at.
These city folk educating them every day, aren't we?
Exactly. I feel as though I'm seeing a whole new experience. You can go back to your wonderful parts of South London. Which, remind me of the part of South London you're from. It's not too far away from Dulwich, I believe it is.
Bromley.
So that's Kent, actually, isn't it? Really? Technically?
Technically.
It's not London at all. It's Bromley, Kent.
It's Greater London.
Yeah, I mean, it's so sad. I've had you down as a South London girl. And
I am from South London. I was raised and born in South London. I just currently live.
Time is getting on. We need to find out what stage Richard Fitzwilliams has actually reached in his queuing for the London Film Festival ticket. So he's up next. So, Ben, go on. Last two questions for Gabriella, please.
Gabriella, have you enjoyed your turn of Lincoln with us today on the show?
Yes, I have, thank you.
Excellent. And will you be joining us again next week?
Yeah, for sure. I'll be back next week.
I didn't want to be the one to forget. I thought of everything I'd never regret. A little time with you is all that I get. That's all I need, because it's all we can take. One thing I never see the same way around. I don't believe it and it slips on the ground. I wanna take you to the place in the Roche, but no one gives us any time anymore. Once you fled looking, it was dark. You made an offer for it, then you ran off. I got a picture of us kids in my head, and all I hear is the last thing that you said. I listened to your problems, now listen to mine. I didn't want to anymore. To a
Just how good Natalie Imbruglia is, really. Probably still in the shadow of Kylie Minogue. Don't worry, Natalie, we still care about you. Instant crush from the album Mail. Ooh, back, I think, in 2002, 2003. Astounding. Becky Morgan Phillips. Last night, of course, we had the excitement of actors from the 80s series Fame that were involved, which is great stuff from that point of view. Let's move slightly further up the acting road, etc. If I said the words Keira Knightley to you, what would your sort of thoughts be? Keira Knightley.
Pirates of the Caribbean.
Pirates of the Caribbean. I mean, would you say this is one of our great British actresses who effectively, she nails everything, really? Or what's the Keira?
She's all right.
She's all right. Ben Lewis.
Yeah, Keira. I think she's a pretty good actress. Mm. She's an actor now. But,
would you, once you realised Keira Knightley was actually in a performance that you were going to queue for tickets, once you realised that she was actually going to be there, would you say, I can take no more, I'm going?
I'd expect her to be on the air with Richard right now.
Richard, is Keira with you? Or is it a case of, no, I've just got to step away from
Well, it is a case that I'll be catching up with Keira, but in a more leisurely period, because the film Colette, which is currently screening at the London Film Festival, opens on the 10th of January. So, I mean, we will undoubtedly be, so to speak, discovering how she is as the French legend. But I would point out that, I mean, I have a love-hate relationship in a way with her, because her disastrous performances is in The Duchess.
There's nothing wrong with The Duchess.
There is.
No, The Duchess was a feeble, silly, and apart from Ralph Fiennes, who did his best with the limited role, and Hayley Atwell did her best, but I mean, the point was, she looked fine as a clothes horse. The Duchess did set the trends and the fashions of the 18th century. This was, incidentally, the 1784 election was the pivot of that period, and my great-great-great-great-grandfather took part in the canvassing and was in the political cartoons at the time. He was Edward Hall, an apothecary, and it was quite interesting. He was a supporter of Charles James Fox, and this was the a period where women were involved in politics, but alas, though the Duchess of Devonshire set the trends and unquestionably was Bergson's Ménage à Trois, which was absolutely fascinating. And Kira simply couldn't pull it off. She couldn't pull off Anna Karenina, and she can be very funny on stage in a comedy. That I concede in The Misanthrope, but equally she can be terribly wooden. And it's just a question of priorities and. Doing a broadcast in a queue has obvious problems because you're not quite sure when you're going to be allowed into a cinema. And the problem with that is that the Wi-Fi very often doesn't work there. So
it could have been a potential disaster, let's face it. You know,
so. Well, it will be next Thursday, unless we change the date, simply because that's the favourite, and that's Olivia Colman. That's the film about Queen Anne and the Duchess of Marlborough, and Olivia Colman, Emma Stone, Rachel Weisz. That'll be absolutely fascinating. But perhaps we might alter the day for next week, because, as you say, it
could be hectic. But who knows?
It could be a little hectic because you can't really control it. There are three screenings, which is very good that the festival's putting on. The festival opened with Steve McQueen's heist thriller Widows last night, and it'll be some wonderful films that we'll be looking at in the coming weeks.
It was 2 years ago we were actually down, that was Tessa Snart and myself, with Graham Harper, talking with your good self on a kind of round-robin table about the festival. We really must do that again. I don't know what, I can't believe 2 years has slipped by. We need to obviously connect from that point of view. Probably not this time around, but London Film Festival, obviously well worthwhile. But for those people who are into festivals, we've got the Cannes MIPCOM reports coming out for next Wednesday. Training ahead there. Meanwhile, before you actually go into the celebration of what happened 49 years ago, well, actually 49 years and several months ago, the first steps on a satellite of the planet Earth. First Man, the story of Neil Armstrong, Ben Lewis, is that something which appeals to yourself?
That certainly does. 1968?
No, 69.
69, sorry. Confused. 68 was the colour television.
68 was the first revolution of the moon, the first orbit around the moon. Just Christmas 68, and then 69. July 1969.
And it was Buzz Aldrin was actually the first person, wasn't he?
No.
I
thought he was the first.
Buzz Aldrin was the second, and that's why everyone forgets him.
Except Ben. Different Brighton thing. Maybe it's a B side. Richard's like a greyhound in the slips, waiting to talk about Ryan Gosling being the joys of Neil Armstrong. But what about yourself, Becky? First Man?
Yeah, I think the moon landing is something that I've always been interested in.
Whether or not it actually happened. Sorry.
No. Stop it. Next, you'll tell me you're a flat earther.
I think that's a good one to throw in. It really livens it up.
Well, it's over to you, Richard, as we watch the trailers and listen to your good self orate about First Man.
Well, it's first class. Director Damien Chazelle, of course, worked with Ryan Gosling successfully, in my opinion, though alas, not in the opinion of a great many in La La Land, which I'm a completely unrepentant admirer of, but I do realise that it polarises opinion like the Red Sea. In this case, you could ask why go to the moon. I mean, the film does give a voice to those who wouldn't have, mainly on cost grounds, and also to the we see footage of the Vietnam War. It was a very turbulent time for America. But the answer is that I showed in the documentary footage of John F. Kennedy, a challenge that mankind had to meet because it was hard. And this does give you an idea of the courage involved in this giant leap for mankind. I mean, the courage is quite literally out of this world. And I have to say, it's a very impressive film. It concentrates on the personal story of Neil Armstrong, played by Ryan Gosling, exceptionally well. This is definitely an Oscar nomination because it's in the nuance. He's a very unassuming, modest man. He's deeply dedicated, but it's the one or two scenes where there is any emotion. They're all the more telling for the restraint of the performance. It is remarkable, as is Claire Foy as Janet, his wife, who clearly is, the suffering that the wives of the astronauts went through, given the circumstances. I mean, we see the disastrous Apollo Command module test in 1967, where three astronauts were killed by fire. It can be terrifying. I mean, one of the things this film does very well, it is quite long, 2 hours 20, but I thought that did very well, and that is, from the very beginning, you're projected insofar as you can be, to a capsule and shaken around, and it was also shown, I mean, it goes back a decade before the actual moon landing, and you see the exhaustive, torturous preparation involved. But basically, it's Gosling's performance. It's also the seamless blend of photography, sound, and music. I mean, they create poetic moments, and we've seen this in a lot of space films, movies, 2001, Gravity, and so on, and you see it here, the Sailors of the Sky, I think, are rightly lauded. What man's conquest of space has meant for nearly 50 years? Well,
Teflon. It's given us Teflon and non-stick pans. That's a big leap forward for many
people. I tell you what, one of the great winners, and this has been the cinema, because, of course, as we all know, science fiction films are the most popular genre of all at the moment, so you could mention that. But of Claire Foy, a special mention, as Janet, I think, supporting actress nomination here, because she's strong-willed, she's resourceful, she's very, very expressive. She showed this at Anne Boleyn in Wolf Hall and in The Queen in the Crown, and she's excellent here. Other supporting roles are definitely supporting, but all well chosen. And this is, it's an impressive film, all the more so that obviously we know how it ends. But what Chazelle does or succeeds in doing is making it exciting. And it's not the sort of film that normally would attract me, I have to say, but I was very impressed with it.
And who was the person who remained in orbit around the moon whilst Aldrin and Armstrong were happily there?
The third person.
Michael Collins.
No one knew about.
Oh, I very, yeah, don't know who.
What's the point in going up if you're not going to work on the moon?
Because somebody has to be there to dock. That.
You're going to go up, but you're not actually going to go on to the moon yourself. Yeah,
sometimes people come in to expect to do the midweek drive, we just keep them outside. They just have to wait and they just have to watch us through the window.
They could have taken it in turns.
It's a way forward. We can't do favours for everybody, whether it's favour, F-A-V-O-U-R or F-A-V-O-R. I think it's the American spelling of a simple favour we're going to next, is it not, Richard?
Well, it is, and directed by Paul Feig, this film is... it reminded me of a quote. It was actually made about a conservative politician in the 1950s called Ian MacLeod. It was said that he was too clever by half. And that is my summary of the plot of this rather extraordinary film, which has taken a lot of money at the box office. I do have to be fair and point that out. It's been a great success. We meet Stephanie Smothers, played by that excellent comic actress, Anna Kendrick. She's a widowed single mother, and she runs a blog with crafts and recipes. And Emily is a busy working mother, played by Blake Lively. Her son attends the same school as Stephanie's, and the two bond, and they become far good friends. And Emily's pretty frustrated by the lack of success of her husband, Sean, played by Henry Golding, who we met with Crazy Rich Asians. And, well, she has a work crisis, and she asks Stephanie to babysit. What next? Well, she disappears, quite literally disappears, and leaves Emily with her son and her husband. And her drowned body is found in a lake in Michigan. But she turns up. She hasn't died, it seems. And it also seems her husband has taken out a $4 million life insurance policy on her. So what happens? No spoilers, obviously, from me. But quite honestly, I'd be talking the whole program out if I detailed the twists and turns of this plot. And the problem is not the cast, who are all extremely good. What did the film intend to be? A so-called mystery thriller, but it isn't exciting enough or convincing enough. A comedy satire, well, it's not funny enough. But do I believe this plot? I'm afraid I simply don't, because whoever put it together was not linked with, I think, what I would call reality. The problem is if something becomes contrived and then you lose interest in the character.
Are you saying the believability factor isn't very high on this one, Richard? When you've got Blake Lively, I mean, she was so good in Green Lantern as Star Sapphire. What, I mean, honestly, yeah?
Blake Lively is a stunning and extremely talented performer. Mm-hmm. But what you have to have is a script. I mean, I like Anna Kendrick, always have, and Henry Golding's very good. It's not the cast, it's the script. It's the story. The movie is so pleased with itself because of all these, to have all these twists and turns and so on. So what would have been an exciting thriller becomes something that, frankly, is unbelievable, and that's its problem. But, I mean, as I say,
Richard, it's got sequences of rain, which is a traditional Hollywood motif for dramatic overs and various other things happening. So you've got rain and umbrellas.
I mean, rain, umbrellas, if I was attending by then, I have to say I don't remember any. I mean, one of the problems with a movie like this is that when the twists become so improbable, your attention wanders. And, yes, a good cast. Give them something proper.
Good cast, weak script. Ben, will you be checking out A Simple Favour?
Well, if I'm honest, that's one of the things that actually annoys me about some of the films. I don't know if you found the same, Richard, that more and more recently, the last few years, storylines are becoming so far-fetched that they don't seem believable
except
anymore.
Avengers Infinity War, which was true to a live reality.
But even looking at... But even just taking, a couple of the recent Bond films, I mean, Quantum Solace is one of the films I don't like either,
of Quantum of Solace, so they've admitted the script is bad simply because of the Hollywood screenwriters' strike.
That's what I mean, but it's just when it's far-fetched like that, and you find that with action films in general, but even with mystery films, a bit like this, it's...
Gone Girl is something which can work. I mean, I have no objection whatsoever to a far-fetched plot if it holds you, if it's exciting, or alternatively, if it's a funny, it's a comedy, it's a satire. If that works on that level, fair enough, absolutely. But when it ceases to work, when quite honestly it's preposterous.
It's trying to be serious, too serious, I think.
It's trying so hard.
Richard, quite simply, what happened to Emily? That's all I say. What happened to Emily?
I'm not going to tell you. I'm not sacrificing my principles.
Of course not. It's all right.
He'd be out of work for the rest of his life if he did that.
I'm really shocked.
Tried to tease it in there. Becky, will you be checking out A Simple Favour?
I think it is something that I would like to watch, actually. But I will go into it now, I think, with a...
Perception.
Yeah, with the perception.
A preconception, anyways. A pre-perception. Oh, well, never mind. So it's kind of thumbs middling for A Simple Favour and thumbs up for First Man, which I'm personally...
Well, it's thumbs up for First Man. It's thumbs very, very middling. I mean, 4 stars for the one, definitely, and two for the other.
No mention of Venom. I'm surprised, Richard. I really thought you would have actually been going into the Spider-Man universe, but never mind. But London Film Festival.
I fear not. Far, far too much to do. They're a good excuse to avoid Venom. I save it for the occasional bad film.
Fair enough. Ben, last two questions, please, for Richard.
Richard, have you enjoyed your telephonic link in the queue with us today?
I have to say that I was very interested in the points that Alex was making about tomorrow's royal wedding.
Wonderful. And will you be joining us again next week?
I will indeed.
It'll be outrageously wonderful. Possibly in the queue, possibly not in the queue, possibly pre-record. It's the uncertainty that makes life interesting. Up next, driverless cars.
The moon. about this one. Tell me, are you locked in the park? Andy, are you goofing on Elvis?
Hey, baby, are you having fun?
If you believe they put a man on the moon, man on the moon. If you believe there's nothing up his sleeve and nothing is cool. Here's a little ghost for the offering. Yeah, 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 yeah. Here's a truck stop instead of St. Peter's. Yeah, 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 yeah. Mr. Andy Kaufman's gone wrestling. Yeah, 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 yeah. Now, Andy, did you hear about this one? Tell me, are you locked in the
of conversation for regular commuters, of course, in an age where we still actually have autonomy over our cars, is how long before that autonomy is lost and cars become autonomous and they become driverless, and we work through a whole range of aspects as well. Now, to talk about the attitude of the British towards self-driving cars, a recent survey that's been put together, we're delighted to welcome two wonderful folk. First of all, Chief Executive at Meridian Mobility UK, that'd be the wonderful Daniel Ruiz. How are you, Daniel?
Good morning, I'm very well indeed.
And we also have Head of Research and Development at Bosch, that would be the wonderful Professor Nick Reed. How are you, Nick?
Hi, yeah, very well, thank you.
Wonderful. Let's come to you first, Nick, because this sort of aspect about driverless cars, which we're told 2020 is the year when all things are likely to happen and so on and so forth. But there's an awful lot of convincing to be done. I mean, that sort of sense of handing everything over to the machine, the computer, will it work?
Well, that's the question. And at Bosch, as developers of this technology, we're really keen to understand that and how this technology will roll out. So we've conducted this survey of more than 3,000 people looking at their attitudes to automation of the driving task. And it showed that around two-thirds of British respondees had a healthy scepticism, I'd say, for the rollout of this technology. But we're really interested in that because we know that there are potential safety benefits and efficiency benefits from the deployment of automated driving. So we want to try and change those attitudes and educate about the potential benefits of this technology.
56% of British people surveyed still not convinced by the idea of automatic vehicles. Habits change, different sort of... I mean, in a sense, it could be a wonderful idea because you technically can get into your vehicle in the morning, you can actually do some work on the way to work, you wouldn't have to worry too much about... I mean, you put your trust in the machine. I mean, Daniel, from Meridian Mobility's perspective, would you say, yeah, that's exactly what we're looking for?
It is exactly what we're looking for. I think that as our role is to be the hub for testing and development of connected and autonomous vehicles and make sure that they are deployed as rapidly and effectively and safely as possible, that's exactly what we're here to do. And just kind of on the last question, it's worth noting that all those people that are sceptical, if they're aware that 74 people are killed or seriously injured on the roads in Great Britain every day, and that 86% of the road collisions are caused by human error, then I think that might sway their position. But that's all about communicating and educating in a way that helps people accept, embrace, understand what's going on.
Absolutely. Of course, something that's regularly trotted out when I start bringing up the topic of driverless cars and automation is, well, in Las Vegas, they've had problems with insurance. They've had the first people to go knocked off from that point of view. And you know, is there just a fear of new technology that's kind of embedding into this aspect that we think, oh, it'll be the end of everything, just like the horseless carriages were at the end of the horses?
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think people like driving. I think people generally would say that they enjoy driving, but increasingly the situations where that's the case because of congestion and so on mean that enjoyment perhaps isn't there, and automation can help manage the load and maybe, as you say, do other things, maybe watch TV, maybe do some work, maybe relax. Ultimately, that's where the automated driving technologies will take us.
And that's right, because life is not binary. There are choices to be made, and so you can use a car in a traditional manner to get from A to B and enjoy the ride as a driver, but more often not, and increasingly people just want to be transported in an efficient, convenient manner.
I love that line, life is not binary to most computer engineers. That's exactly what it is. It's the binary routine that's on or off that works the whole computer world. But never mind. Let's not go into Boolean logic because that's been a different line entirely. In terms of education, because it's clearly going to take not a massive amount, but there's going to be clearly a shift in terms of how we get the messages out here. Will it be a case of you'll be looking at popular television programmes, you'll be looking at a whole variety of other things? So, for instance, when the character James Bond gets in a driverless car, will suddenly think, that's it, it'll become cool, shall we say?
I think it has to be a combined effort between government and industry around what the benefits of this technology will be, and educating the public that it's not going to happen overnight. We're not going to take control away from people, but there are massive benefits that can be gained in the short term through things like autonomous emergency braking systems and lane guidance systems that are already available today. And gradually, the levels of automation will increase, and we'll start to see those bigger safety and efficiency benefits as we get to a more automated system.
Safety benefits will increase, which is great. Other things we'll be working through. What about cost? Because clearly that's going to be a major impact in terms of whether people actually say, well, do I actually shell out X number of thousands of pounds for a general car? Do I actually go for a different model, but it's more affordable? I mean, will these driverless cars be more affordable, or will we be still maintaining the same kind of cost balance that we have today?
I think the answer is that we will be living in a different world. The wide-scale deployment of autonomous cars is a few years away.
You're time-travelling now. Let's not do that.
No, I'm not time-travelling, because the point is that there is a progression in terms of safety, in terms of technology, in terms of the commercial approach to all this. And I think that what we'll find is there are different ways of paying for your transport. The service of transport will not necessarily be paid for by buying your own vehicle. That may be an option, but there will be a range of other options, as there are in other spheres where you can either buy, hire, rent, lease, and so on.
And presumably, in terms of power consumption, we're looking mostly at fossil fuel-friendly cars here, so they'll basically be electric cars in the main?
Yeah, I think that's right. I think we're moving towards increasing electrification of powertrains. There are some technological reasons why it's simpler to use an electric powertrain versus a combustion engine powertrain. But I think that's a general trend, and we're working towards that as an industry.
There's a fascinating range of things that we can talk about in terms of obviously how things are working through. I suppose if you look back 100 years ago, Ford was developing his mass production line. We were developing the format from there. That brought us both benefits and some challenges at the same time. Maybe the same thing will happen with respect to automatic cars as well. But if people are wanting to find out further information about this particular survey, where's the best place to go, Daniel?
Well, it's actually Bosch's survey. Meridian is very supportive of it, but I think I'm going to pass that question right over to Nick.
Nicely done, sir. Anyway, okay, Nick, where on the Bosch site can people locate this particular information?
Sure. So people can find out more at our website, and that's bosch.co.uk/automated-driving.
Well, the great news is we haven't had to take the Turing test this morning to actually sort out that the three of us have actually been human beings, at least I think we are. So that's all good. We haven't been replaced as yet. But have you both had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us this morning, Daniel and Nick?
Yes, thank you.
Great, nice to speak to you.
In which case, hopefully we'll speak again. Hopefully when the cars are beginning to emerge on the roads, will you be kind enough to come back?
Certainly.
Happy to.
The big question, of course, is whether or not it's the Turing test, T-U-R-I-N-G, or Turing test, which is obviously a different line entirely. Ian Lennox, would you consider a driverless car?
Yes, I don't drive at all now, because I hardly ever used it. When I retired, I found I was hardly ever using the car, so every time I tried to, the battery had gone, that sort of thing. Mm. So I just got rid of it, and I use the public transport now.
Public transport.
Which, fortunately for me, in the castle, is extraordinarily good.
Well, this is it. Just like Lincoln in many ways, here, in fact.
Is it? Fair enough, yeah. Well, on the point of pollution and things, when I was a young man, the whole system up here was run by the trolley buses, the electrical. We had electrical sort of...
trams.
Tram line. Well, they were buses, but they had an overhanging link with electrical current. I went right through the city, and there was, I mean, think about it today, the amount of of clean air we saved, it would be quite phenomenal, really. Yeah. And
I mean, these are the kind of messages which we could spend quite literally hours talking about, but fundamentally we want to know, are you going to Mike Ashley's next all-round gathering in Ponteland with the lads to actually show just how well you can perform for at least 45 minutes before you decide to say, let's chuck it all in and lose again?
No, I've told him I don't eat pizzas.
No. It was funny, though, wasn't it?
It was. Yeah, you see, the words there of Brighton-based Ben, and indeed, Ben, now Brighton continuing to accelerate away from Newcastle in terms of league points.
We're quite lucky to win against West Ham, I must admit. Yeah. But,
Glenn Murray continues his scoring rate, and then onwards, ever onwards.
Win's a win. A win is a win.
Given that Newcastle...
Especially in a position like Brighton, yeah. I think they needed the win.
And Newcastle actually haven't had one this season, actually.
No, we haven't.
We're not quite...
Because, I think it's Huddersfield and Cardiff as well.
I was going to say, Huddersfield, you're not Huddersfield, so you're forgiven.
Well, I think Huddersfield are reaching they've reached their limits now, I think.
Really?
I just get the impression that they're doomed, and Cardiff are as well.
Well, that's one of our journalism graduates, Adam Tomlinson, who's actually on this campus. Oh, actually, here's a revelation for you that she probably wasn't expecting. I actually heard one of our tutors, no names, but initials SP, yes, actually looking to seek out tickets for Huddersfield playing Chelsea. Unfortunately, they've already played, so just couldn't get them. But anyway, it was just a way for
I wonder who won.
I think it was I think Chelsea managed to just about limp through, as far as I recall.
Very close game, obviously.
But as we know, when Emma Street's here, she tends to glaze over at this particular moment in time. Is the same thing happening with Becky Morgan Phillips? I mean, Becky, I mean, the game of association football, when we start talking about Newcastle United, is a case of, I'm sorry, you're speaking strange language now.
Yeah, no, not a clue what you're talking about at this point.
She scored very highly, being, you know...
It's a bit like me with fame.
Very good on netball, though.
I don't know, were you good at netball? Was it netball or a sport?
I was good at netball, actually.
Yeah, you see, Ian Lennox has been keeping an eye on you over the last 15 years, actually. You may not have noticed it, but he has been, you know, that's why I used to work for the Guardian newspaper. He's always checking out potential Midrick drive-outs.
I never quite got netball because they sort of had to stop. like they'd been frozen in time when they got the ball. Not the room of the ball in their hands, I don't think. Whereas... basketball to me seems more and more fluid game.
Always annoyed me there was no backboard though, the netball court. So it was always harder to score on the hoops.
Right.
Yeah. Well, there's always beach volleyball, I suppose. But that's another line entirely.
Oh, yeah. Played a bit of that before.
Yeah. Well, Brighton. Mm. On those pebbles.
Yeah. No, there are beach volleyball courts down there as well. Oh. So there's a whole club down there.
Civilization, Brian. It's amazing. Ian, are you looking forward to the England games? Or is it a case of, well, there's only going to be 500 people allowed in the stadium in the first place, and they're going to be media folk, so why bother?
Yeah, no, I'd like to see how he's progressing. I think I speak more on hope and expectation, I suppose, but I do get the impression that there's some good England players coming through from the young teams, you know, that won things, and that if Southgate has a promising start, I think he's changed the system which they play, and I think England could emerge as a very, very strong team in the next 4 or 5 years, which is something that they never could really hope for in the past, because they just played silly football. the English virtues that get together.
And they would take on players who effectively were injured. Let's just briefly ask Becky, did you actually watch any of England's game in the World Cup, or was it a case of no, even then I was not going to actually be swept up in the nationalistic pride. I'm going to actually read and do something much more intelligent, like listen to BBC Radio 4.
No, unfortunately, I did have to watch some of it because we had to have it on where I worked.
Uh-huh.
So it was like policy that we had to have the games
and would you like to share and give a shameless name check to this place where you were working?
Team Sport? It's a go-karting
Team track. Sport go-karting track. There we are. We'll say again, Team Sport go-karting track. That should get at least one at our broadcast sorted through there. Spread the word. But surely if you're go-karting, fundamentally different from association football, or is it a new form of go-karting?
I think we had to play all sports, so we had to play Wimbledon, like all the tennis matches and stuff like that. So they just made us play everything.
It's amazing. Ian, you're going to love us for this, but we've got to squeeze in a feature about Stoptober and we go sober for October. Okay, even the month that you say that. You might well say it's easy for us to say, but we'll carry on regardless. So I'm going to ask Ben to put those last two questions to you.
Ian, have you enjoyed your Tenerphonic Lupenfest today on the show?
Yes, I have. It's interrupted my preparation for my breakfast, so I shall return to that.
Oh, well, as ever. And we'll join us again next week. Hopefully,
yes,
we'll be interrupting you again then as well.
How's Ollie and how's Oboe?
They're very fine. They're catching mice at a phenomenal rate and bringing them into the house.
They're gifts, they're tribute offerings to their master. That's what it is.
Whole life is beautiful. You were the light for me to find my truth. I just wanna say thank you. Leaving to find my soul. Told her I had to go. And I know it ain't pretty when our hearts get broke. Too young to feel this old. Watching us both turn cold. Oh, I know it ain't pretty when two hearts get broke. Yeah, I know it ain't pretty when two hearts get broke.
I hope someday we'll sit down together and laugh with each other about these days. All our troubles we'll lay to rest and we'll wish we could come back to these days. To show for it now, and I know it ain't pretty when the fire burns out. Calling me when I'm drunk, remind me of what I've done. And I know it ain't pretty when you're trying to move on.
Traveled around the world, think where you living at now. I heard you moved to Austin, got an apartment and settled down. And every once in a while, I start texting, write a paragraph, but then I delete the message. Think about you like a pastime. I could cry you a river, get you baptized. Or I wasn't ready to act right. Used to always think I'd get you back right. They say that things fall apart. We were gonna move to Brooklyn, you were gonna study art. Love is just a tool to remind us who we are and that we are not alone when we're walking in the dark.
I hope someday we'll sit down together and laugh with each other about these days. All our troubles will lay to rest. We wish we could come back to these days.
Brady spoken as the month proceeds with respect to clearly the joys of going sober for October. And we're delighted now to be able to talk to the fundraising manager at Macmillan, who's going to talk about research that's recently commissioned by Macmillan to actually talk about the notion of going sober for October, the benefits and all manner of things. Kirsty Hobbs, good to speak to you. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you for having me.
Excellent. Genuine delight. Now, this research that suggested that the UK is expected to spend £2 billion on alcohol. That's wrong, isn't it? I mean, you know, we've got to actually, in all sorts of ways.
It's not wrong. And yes, our analysis does show that we are set to spend over £2 billion on alcohol this month. And that's enough to fund all of Macmillan's services to people living with cancer for more than a decade. And our services include a range of healthcare professionals and information centres that support thousands of people with cancer and their loved ones each day.
I mean, I think, again, looking at it from the ethically wrong and morally wrong, as opposed to the actual factual incorrectness of the whole thing, clearly it's true from that perspective. I often say to students, actually, think of the liver. I mean, you know, it's not good when you think of the liver and all manner of things. I know it's a very substantial organ, but, you know, alcohol is a poison. It is toxic. If it was released on the market today, as has been frequently said, it would be classified as a dangerous substance. Is it just it's so embedded in our culture that actually it's a case of we need to actually drink and be merry and consume alcohol to have a good time?
I just think that obviously the £2 billion spent is quite staggering. But this October, we're just encouraging everyone to think about how else that money might be spent. That £2 billion works out as over £70 million on alcohol a day across Britain's homes, bars and restaurants. And that's enough to fund more than 400 Macmillan nurses for 3 years, which could help over 200,000 people with cancer. So whilst it's staggering, we're just asking people to just think about how else the money might be spent. And it's not too late either to sign up and take part. People can still go to gosober.org.uk and challenge themselves. It is an abstinence-based fundraising challenge, so it's just about challenging themselves to go without alcohol and get sponsored for taking on that challenge.
Now, many folk would actually say that if you're teetotal already, you've already made a lifestyle choice, a lifestyle decision. This is part of, obviously, the nudge theory of ensuring that actually people's lifestyles are generally good all round. And presumably you wouldn't have any objection if somebody actually said, OK, I went through October sober, let's do it the same for November, December, January as well.
That would be up to them, of course, but I think you certainly would notice some fairly immediate health benefits. I did go sober myself last year, and I definitely noticed positive benefits for myself. I was sleeping better, meant I was eating more healthily, and yeah, I just felt those benefits were sort of fairly immediate, and that was really good to see.
Very much a win-win situation. We know the excellent work that Macmillan's obviously do. Macmillan nurses, obviously, over the years. I'm still sort of quite staggered by the notion of a daily budget of £70 million that we spend on alcohol is enough to spend to fund 400 Macmillan nurses for 3 years. I mean, that's...
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Macmillan does have a really wide range of services as well that cover things from our healthcare professionals and our information centres as well, all of which... thousands of people with cancer and their loved ones.
And as we've said, the benefits are there for all sorts. So it's a win-win situation to actually take this challenge, go for the whole system. We mentioned the website once. Can you do it one more time, Kirsty, just to ensure that whether people are listening live or via podcast, they've got the full details? Where can people go to?
It is gosober.org.uk.
And that's a wonderful thing to do as well. Kirsty Hobbs, fundraising manager at Macmillan. And let's hope, we'll say, in next year or so, when we speak again, Kirsty, all will be well. And you know, there's less sort of likelihood of this because people will sort of understand the message that it's got benefits for all, really.
There are certainly benefits for everyone, yes.
Thank you, Kirsty. And as we head up to the news, a little flyer that up immediately after the news, Justine Baines, director at SAFA, the Armed Forces charity, will be talking about the major sacrifices military families make here on Siren Radio, Lincoln's first community radio service.
Say that's fine, side to side, maybe we crossed a line. Everything changes when you hear me say your name. Oh, what a shame. Guess I'll see you another time. See you another.
guess I'll see you another time. See you another. Help me understand what it is you want, 'cause I'm constantly feeling confidently lost. Is it easier said than done? We all do stupid things when we fall in love. Moving on and you say that's fine. Eye to eye, maybe we crossed a line. Take a step back when you come near. Oh, wish you were here. Guess I'll see you another time. See you another. Guess I'll see you another time. See you another. Guess I'll see you another time. See you another. Guess I'll see you another time. See you another. In the moment, I wouldn't want anything to change. But when it passes, nothing's ever the same. Lose it all, I wanna fall. Won't you feel it drop beneath our feet? Ooh, and the call up against the wall. Don't you think it's time again for us to meet? But you say, guess I'll see you another time. See you another. Guess I'll see you another time.
And the weather today, highs of 21 degrees centigrade, lows of 11 degrees centigrade, a day of sunny intervals with a fresh breeze. Now, it goes without saying that our military servicemen and women make huge sacrifices to serve and protect, but what's often overlooked is the tremendous sacrifice made by their fans and families, and indeed from birthdays and weddings onwards. Now, to highlight some of the challenges faced by military families, we're delighted to welcome back to the programme once again the director at SAFA, the Armed Forces Charity, of course. That would be wonderful, Justine Baines. How are you, Justine? Excellent. And indeed, you also got David Jones as well with us. David, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you.
David, share with us some of your challenges to start off with in terms of, you know, the notion that, you know, we just don't understand in Civvy Street what sacrifices you guys are making on a day-by-day basis.
Well, a lot of people don't realise the length of time that we actually spend away when we're on things like deployment. And consequently, we miss a lot of major milestones within that time. For myself in particular, my daughter was born halfway through a tour of Afghanistan in 2011, so I missed the whole first few months of her life.
Well, clearly that has all kinds of impacts and stresses and strains. I mean, Justine, you yourself also were separated from your husband in the early years of your marriage. So, you know, I mean, I know there's the initial response from this, well, you made your choice, you expect these kind of things, but at the same time, we need to acknowledge that these are challenges that you guys are faced with on a day-by-day basis.
Yeah, I think that's a very good point. When you join the military, you do accept that you're going to be deployed. But I don't think the public really understand quite how long that deployment can be. We did some research recently that said around about 81% of people didn't realise that you could be away for up to 10 months. And certainly my husband was in the late 90s, was away for 10 months when he was in the Navy. And that's really hard. But you will get people that say, well, so do, you know, lots of people go away to work and that's just something that you sign up for. But I think what we have to recognise is that when you're in the military, you're protecting the country and you're willing to sacrifice your life. And I think as a society, we have a responsibility to take more care in understanding the pressures that being a protective force actually puts on family life.
In the studio, we got two fine young students who I don't think are considering the armed forces, but you never know. First of all, Ben, there is Ben. Thoughts from yourself?
Yeah, I think it's quite interesting, the amount of challenges that armed forces face on, you know, I'd say behind the scenes, that people don't perhaps really realise. And I know there's a lot of, say, welfare things going on as well with, you know, things like money and how to organise your life, perhaps once you enter Civvy Street. And I don't know if perhaps the services are there for everyone, or can be there for when people do need it as often as they might need it.
In the case, Justine, of SAFA, I mean, we've spoken about the excellent work that you do as an armed forces charity, but is this something where, again, part of the remit of the charity is to raise awareness of this and at least sort of make people to acknowledge that, you know, these are challenges that people actually have? I mean, that survey, 81% of civilians surveyed had no idea that these kind of things can occur.
And SAFA as a charity does fill in a lot of the gaps. We have an amazing set of volunteers, both in that are serving themselves and actually in the community, who do things like go and help people when their partner is away. We had a situation where a lady was diagnosed with breast cancer while her husband was on a deployment, and he obviously was sent back for a while, but he still had to go away while she was going through treatment. And so, some of our volunteers went and helped with taking her to hospital. They funded some of the extra childcare that she needed, and actually just became a extra support network for her. So, you know, we are filling in those gaps. And what we would ask is, if people care about this, they can show their gratitude by donating online at safa.org.uk.
Becky, thoughts from yourself?
I was actually an army cadet for about 3.5 years, and a lot of the people that I was in cadets with, they did join the armed forces. A few of my friends are currently chipped out on deployment, and one of my friends is facing a very similar situation because his girlfriend is currently pregnant, and his tour lasts longer than her pregnancy is going to last, so he's going to be away for the birth. And you see people struggling with things like that, and the support they get and needs to be better, I think.
And that's, again, a clear case study, Justine, from somebody who, say, no longer in the army, but that connection is there. It does impact on us all, really, and I think it's important to bear that in mind.
Absolutely. And we spoke earlier in the year about the public needing to be a little bit more aware of the pressures that are on armed forces, and perhaps being a bit more proactive in showing their support. And I think this is an area that if somebody does want to be proactive and actually step up to help, you know, come and be a volunteer with SAFA and, you know, help people that are in this sort of situation. Obviously, in the area that your radio station is, we've got lots of RAF stations, so there's a lot of people around. Yeah. They're actually in the military.
Absolutely, RAF's captain's still there, and a range of other factors as well. Time is tight as ever. Justine Baines, Director at SAFA, the Armed Forces Charity. You can, of course, access us online. And David Jones, many thanks indeed for today. Hopefully we'll speak again very soon, and keep the positivity going, folks.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Know that I've been messed up, you never let me give up. All the nights and the fights and the blood and the breakups, you're always there to call up. I'm a pain, I'm a child, I'm afraid, but yeah, you understand, yeah, like no one can. I know that we don't look like much, but they don't stand a chance like us. 16, and you never even judged me. Matter of fact, always thought you were too cool for me. Sitting there in the caravan, all the nights we've been drunk on the floor, but yeah, you understand, yeah, like no one can. We both know what they say about us, but they don't stand a chance, because when I'm with you, when I'm with you, I'm standing with an army, I'm standing with an army. When I'm with you, when I'm with you, I'm standing with an army, standing with an army. Dark times, you can always find the bright side. I'm amazed by the things that you would sacrifice just to be there for me. How you cringe when you sing out of tune, but yeah, it's everything. So don't change a thing. We both know what they say about us, but they don't stand a chance, because when I'm with you, when I'm with you, I'm standing with an army, I'm standing with an army. When I'm with you, when I'm with you, I'm standing with an army, standing with an army. We'll be right back.
Yes, tailgating, bad road surfaces, driving British motorists around the bend. Around a third of UK drivers regularly feeling stressed behind the wheel. It can happen. To calm us down, hopefully, from I Am Road Smart, the head of driver behaviour at Rebecca Ashton is with us now. Rebecca, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm well, thank you.
Good. Yes, we're so stressed. It comes in all sorts of ways. But this thing about almost a third of UK drivers regularly feeling stressed behind the wheel, that's not great. And tailgating likewise. We've got two folks at Ben Lewis. You're just taking your driving lessons and you get annoyed by tailgaters.
Oh, dear, yeah. I think, well, I mean, from the learner's perspective, it's a quite stressful experience, I'd say, having someone right at your backside on the road. It doesn't help, puts you under a bit of pressure. And I think it makes it quite an unsafe environment.
So, Rebecca, what is the solution for this particular side of things? I mean, we've got this survey on behalf of Swinton Group that effectively suggests bad weather conditions that can be there. I mean, all stress factors. What's the solution, Rebecca?
I think really we need to take more time for our journeys. We need more time, we need space, and we need to be really courteous towards other road users.
That sounds great in principle, which is fantastic. I mean, were you surprised by any of the survey findings that was actually there? Or is it just a case of, you know, sadly, we're becoming less and less patient behind the wheel?
I would love to say I was surprised, but unfortunately, no, I wasn't surprised. We do live in a day and age where people are just not being as kind and courteous to other people. And because we're time poor, we're taking our problems out on other people on the roads.
Becky, you're a cyclist. Are you a driver as well? Do you drive your vehicle? Yeah. Of course, you do drive. Does this resonate with your own experience as a young driver?
Yeah, it's very stressful, especially when you know you're doing everything correctly and then there are people on the roads that are not paying any regard to anyone else's safety. That's just takes the joy out of driving for me, really.
Now, this campaign, it's I Am Road Smart together with Swinton to actually remind drivers of their road manners. Are there any kind of key tips, or is it just a case of remember to breathe and, for goodness sakes, you know, keep your eyes on the road and so on?
Absolutely. You need to remember to breathe. You need to remember to take your time and be courteous to other people. No way did anyone get up that morning with the sole purpose of upsetting you. So I would say make sure that you're courteous to other people on the road. And if you've got somebody behind you who you find is a little bit close, why not just pull over for a couple of seconds and let them go? Much better to have them in front of you than worrying you behind.
See, clearly, Rebecca, we need to have your voice as a disembodied calming thing behind us just to say it's going to be OK. Ben, any other closing questions at this stage?
I kind of agree with most of what's been said, to be honest. All I'd say is if obviously you're on a road that you perhaps can't pull into, but what would be your other suggestion in terms of, do you keep at the safe speed that you're keeping at, or do you need to try and give space where possible? I'm just keen to find out, really.
Clearly that's the interesting, but Rebecca.
Okay, so I would say keep at the same speed, perhaps lengthen the space between you and the vehicle in front so that you've got more time to react and to control the person behind you. So if you need to slow down, you're able to do it over a slightly longer period of time if they're right behind you. The other thing you can do is perhaps go round a roundabout if you're able to, all the way around it to let them go. So there are other things that you can do to help control that situation.
Undertaking, that's what I find quite frustrating as well. Now, you might say, but when people sort of deliberately undertake it, just let it go. So we need to ensure that we breathe through it from that perspective. Do you think it's going to get better, Rebecca? Or is it, with driverless cars, we were talking about in the first part of the programme, do you think that could actually help matters? Or is it just a case of, no, we just need to remember our good manners?
Well, I think, you know, when we get to a stage where everybody has some sort of connected vehicle, then it might help because vehicles are able to let each other know that they're there. But we're not at that situation yet. So really, we just need to keep with good manners and hope that, you know, we're going to be able to give confidence to people and make sure that they're comfortable on the roads.
And finally, where can people go to find out further information about this Swinton and I Am Road Smart campaign?
Well, if you go to the Swinton website, which is swinton.co.uk, you will be able to get links to I Am Road Smart on there as well.
Rebecca, it's been calming, relaxing, head of driver behaviour. We'd expect no less from I Am Road Smart. Rebecca Ashton, many thanks. Hopefully we'll speak again soon.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Asked a girl what she wanted to be. She said, baby, can't you see? I want to be famous, a star on the screen. But you can do something. Yes, I'm gonna be a star. Baby, you can.
tailgate, not to tailgate, to be calm, not to be calm. Just make those decisions. Make a decision in some way, shape or form. Who better to actually speak to when we're talking about making decisions than the awesomely talented architect and general all-round wonderful consultant with KBMG Consulting. It's KJP Sheedy. Yes, the man himself, Kieran. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Alex. I'm good. How are you? It's a good introduction. Thank you.
Well, I mean, when you've got good thinking and bad, using the science of cognition to make better decisions, this can actually change our lives completely in all sorts of ways. And how can it do that, Kieran?
Well, essentially by making us a bit better at thinking and therefore a bit better at making decisions. All of us make decisions every day. Some of them are even quite important. And the better we are at making those decisions, the better our lives will be.
Now, in terms of obviously your own experience, there's a whole range of research that you've carried out from that perspective. Knowing how to make decisions, or sometimes just making that decision, can sometimes be, I mean, as indeed our followers of The Good Place would say on the TV, it's just awesomely difficult and problematic. How do we do that?
I'm a fan of The Good Place as well, actually, yes. Hopefully no one's ever quite as bad as him for decision-making. But
we can't all be chiddy, let's face it. So take the phone call to not take the phone call, oh, Lord.
Exactly. No, I think the thing about making decisions is understanding how your thinking is influencing the decision. So when you're trying to decide something, if you can actually separate the various influences on your mind, so you can understand what's pushing you in different directions, that can really help with the actual making of a decision. So you can tell if you're being biased by the expectation that something will happen the same way as it happened the last time. So, for example, if you think, well, I'm an unlucky person. So when you're making a decision, you'll think, well, I'm going to be unlucky, so I might as well play it safe. If you have that bias of being unlucky, you will actually be overly conservative. You don't need to have that bias. If you recognize it, you can remove it.
That seems to make eminent sense. But let's ask our studio co-presenters and midweek drivettes today. Becky, Morgan Phillips, from your own point of view, does this resonate with yourself?
Well, I'm terrible at making decisions. I deliberate over everything for the longest time. And I think, yeah, those biases do make them hard because I'll think to myself, oh, well, they didn't work out last time for me, so probably shouldn't do it again, or this, that, the other, or, oh, I do consider myself quite an unlucky person, so every decision I make usually...
You've made the decision to do the morning show this morning. That seems to be working out okay so far, an hour and 18 minutes in. So, Kieran, is in many ways what Becky's just described there, does it make mark her out as being almost the archetypal case study that you've been looking for the sequel?
Yeah, great suggestion. Well, Becky, one thing I would say to you, you can actually be luckier than you currently are. You have to do four things precisely, and you will be luckier. Do you want to know what those things are?
Yeah.
Don't tease us, Kieran. We can't cope.
Well, to be a bit luckier, first of all, you have to be alert. You have to keep your eyes open and just keep observing the environment around you. You have to bounce back. You have to, when bad things happen, you need to just move on. You need to trust your intuition. You need to, when you have a decision to make and you think it is just too hard, you need to sit back, disconnect, and say, what's my gut telling me to do? What's my hunch to do? And the final thing to do is you need to think positively. And that turns into a bit lucky. Be alert, bounce back, trust your intuition, and think positively. You do those four things, science says you will be a luckier person.
Ben, you're nodding there. You've had experience working with our fine company last year. You're back here, head of Signet PR. Does this connect with yourself?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say I've been quite lucky in the things I've done, but I think you've got to make sacrifices to be lucky. And you do, but you reap the rewards after. But, I think a big thing for me is weighing up the positives and the negatives, and ultimately, depending on the strength of either of those, will determine which decision you make. Whether it's the right decision, and then great, you've made a good decision. But if it's the wrong one, that's how you learn, and that's how you prepare yourself better for next time. You have to make a similar decision.
Kieran, does that connect from your own experience? I mean, clearly, when you're working in restaurants, healthcare, property, mobile telephony, all apparently diverse interests, but you've all made a success of them from that point of view. Is what Ben's described something else, which you, when we weigh up, essentially playing the percentage game, perhaps?
I think what Ben says makes perfect sense. One of the really important things about decisions is actually understanding how you make decisions. And in the book, Good Thinking and Bad, there is actually a decision process, which is called the decide process. And it breaks decision-making down into six steps. And what normally happens is people miss out one or two of the steps. And a very common one, and Ben has just described it, is the final step, which is the evaluate step. And that's actually just making sure that you've decided before you actually, or while you're making the decision, you will actually have a test to see whether it was a good one or not. And you apply that test as soon as you can. And if it's a bad decision, you act and move on. People tend not to assess decisions, not to evaluate them in retrospect.
Ben?
Yeah, much agreed. And I think that's the thing. The problem is you often see time and time again people making similar bad decisions, and perhaps they're not learning from where they've gone wrong or learning how to make the decision better. Or
England football team managers, for instance, before Gareth Southgate. Same old decisions.
You can apply it in many situations, and I think that's how some people become very successful, is because they've learned from mistakes. Everyone makes mistakes. It's human nature too. But it's a case of how you go on from that and how you apply yourself better next time to be better equipped and ultimately get the rewards you want to achieve.
Kieran, anything you'd like to add apart from, if you wish to follow through with this, get hold of a copy of Good Thinking and Bad, Using the Science of Cognition to Make Better Decisions as soon as possible?
Well, the good thing is that you don't have to remember the whole title, just Good Thinking and Bad in Amazon and you've got it. But let me say one more thing. I think that most people don't realize that they're already very, very clever. All you need to do is focus a little bit on how you think, and you will be even better at doing it. You're not learning new techniques, you're just focusing on the techniques you already know.
Which is the science of metacognition, thinking exactly. About thinking. It's like meta-narratives, peeling a whole range of things back. I'm actually very tempted to actually say we can actually use Ben and Becky as case studies over the next few months, Kieran, but that presupposes a positive answer to two questions I'm going to put to you now. First of all, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme this morning, Kieran Sheedy?
Yes, I have. I've enjoyed it, and nice to talk to you guys.
Well, the next critical question is, would you be kind enough to join us again, and can we connect with you on a semi-regular basis to keep us updated about the joys of metacognition, and we could follow the progress of Ben and Becky as they move into probably Jeff Bezos-esque levels of success and happiness and so on.
That sounds like an excellent plan.
A round of applause for KGB Sheedy, please. Awesome. Up next, hopefully, William Sitwell.
Thanks a lot, guys.
You're listening to Siren 107.3. Good morning. Time now on the Midweek Drive Morning Edition for culinary class and gastronomic gorgeousness with the broadcasting legend, who is William Sitwell.
Yeah, and that's why Rachel is now working for BBC Radio 1, a much smaller station than Siren. But what the hey, William Sitwell is back with us. Hurrah! How are you, William? Good morning, belated happy birthday. Welcome back.
Good morning. Yeah. Good morning. I'm very well, thank you. This morning,
fantastic.
Very beautiful sunny day it is in the city of London.
Oh, well, that's just outrageously fantastic in so many ways, because we have somebody from London who has been now in Lincoln for 3.5 weeks, and apart from the quietness and the strangeness of the lack of public transport, she's managing to settle down. That's Becky Morgan Phillips.
Hello.
Becky, the city is just as nothing. I knew something had changed. It's just not quite the same without you.
That's it. The message is out there. And back from one English year at Crewe, where he was doing wonderful stuff in public relations for Bentley Motors, amongst other things. We have a gentleman who said, it's been years since I spoke to him. I bet he's forgotten me. It's Ben from Brighton. Ben Lewis is back for you. William Sitwell.
Good morning, William.
Hello, Ben.
Exactly. And we're very keen, just dialing back slightly, to talk about eggs, scrambled eggs. And as I was saying last week, the excellent way you would have some exceptional lines of how you excellently deal with eggs and so on. So just talk us through that exquisite moment, please, William.
Well, OK, so for many years I've struggled to find a decent plate of scrambled eggs in cafes and restaurants across Britain. Chefs are either too incompetent or too lazy to do it properly. And I just take my life into my own hands occasionally. I lose my marbles and I order scrambled eggs. And of course, as you might imagine, it's a disaster because they can't do them properly. So I decided that I would actually do something about it. So in the kitchen in which I'm standing at the moment, my test kitchen here in at the Waitrose and Partners test kitchen, which is where we test all our recipes in the magazine, I decided to gather some of my celebrity chefy friends. So Aldo Zilli, Valentine Warner, Henry Harris, and others. And we tested about 10 recipes from the great and the good to respected food writers, to famous chefs, Gordon, Delia, Heston, Jamie. We tested all these recipes blind. We didn't see anyone cooking them. We did scores for appearance, taste, texture, and so on. And we declared a winner. And the winner of the Clarence Court Great British Scrambled Egg Challenge was Rose Prince. Now, the key thing about Rose's recipe is that there is nothing added apart from seasoning at the end but butter and eggs. And the important thing is, in terms of her recipe, which is why we thought it was the best, is that you put the butter in cold, into a cold pan. You add your room temperature fresh Burford brands or your leg bars or whatever other eggs you can get your hands on. And then you slowly stir the mixture with the heat. And the other secret ingredient is a wooden fork. So get yourself a wooden fork, because when you turn the mixture through the wooden fork's prongs, you're not sort of folding it so much with a spatula. So you do that gently. You do not season at the beginning. You don't salt your eggs, because that actually affects the chemical nature of the eggs coming together. Season with salt and pepper at the end. And before the eggs are ready, you've either got to get your toast person on hand, bung the toast down, get the toaster, pop it up, sourdough if you can, lovely crunchy bread. If you've got lots of butter in your eggs, then you don't need to butter the toast. Spoon it on and shove it in your gob.
Ben, you were nodding throughout that. I mean, is that...
That's exactly how I do mine.
Really?
And without the wooden spoon, no, the wooden fork, sorry. I need to invest in one of those. But
get a wooden fork.
Yeah, I need to. But funnily enough, I followed Gordon Ramsay's recipe. I know he puts creme fraiche in it, but I don't put creme fraiche in it because I think it spoils it. And I mean, really, I actually love what, you know, but I completely agree with you, William, because I've been to many places and had scrambled egg and they've just spoiled it completely.
Oh dear.
Completely overcooked it or undercooked it, and it's just not correct. I don't find it correct.
I sense a spiritual band of scrambled egg brothers.
It annoys me. We need to make some sort of revolution on this.
This could be...
I went to someone the other day, ordered scrambled eggs, and it was a sort of omelette that had been turned. You don't need to whisk the eggs. You know, the whole point is that you also want a bit of white at the end as well. So if you whisk them that you get rid of that. So a hint of white along with the yellowness of the eggs at the end is really important.
The quality of the eggs matters as well. That's the,
of course.
The thing people don't realise.
You don't need to store eggs in the fridge.
No.
Room temperature.
Agreed. Much agreed.
Becky, is there something which, again, you sort of have never quite considered the significance of the scrambled egg to the human species?
Scrambled eggs are my favourite kind of egg, but I've never thought that much into it, I'm afraid.
Well, they can't be your favourite kind of egg if you haven't. Well, I mean, put more things.
I know what a bad scrambled egg tastes like, and I know what a really nice one is, but I don't really make them myself. My mum does.
Oh. I make them quite often.
Well, there we are.
It's good.
There's a whole new line
Indeed.
There in terms of the campaign that we've... Square plates never quite took off. I think scrambled eggs will, though.
What do you mean square plates never quite took off? I've got them. I've had them banned in restaurants across the country. When was the last time you saw a Morris dancer with a square plate with some bad scrambled eggs on?
Do you know, William?
I've been getting rid of all this crap.
Well, the plank of wood annoys me as well. When you get a burger or something on a plank of wood.
Restaurants, yeah.
What's wrong with a plate? What is wrong with a plate?
Imagine a Morris dancer bringing you a badly made plate of scrambled eggs on a wooden board.
Oh, it's just any person's worst nightmare.
Could be an alternate dimension, of course, in which we're still part of Europe. But never mind. No, that's just step away from that. Ben, any other questions you'd like to put to William about life and so on?
Yes. I've been meaning to. I was going to speak to you about it last week.
He's been so... all we had to do was to wish him happy birthday because he was on a conference call.
I wanted to bring this up because I know we've spoken about this the last couple of years, and it was the Michelin Awards quite recently.
Yeah.
And I wanted to know your opinion on... perhaps some of the good things that came from it, but also some of the bad things. For example, I know Marcus Waring obviously got deducted a star. I wanted to know your thoughts on that, because I know you did quite a bit of stuff with Barclay Hotel.
Well, first of all, what Michelin is good at is all of the guides, all of the recommendation it gives below Michelin, so the Bib Gourmand and so on. It's a very good, solid guide to good places to eat up and down the country. When it comes to stars... I'm kind of confused, because I think it tries to award things to trendy places that it thinks will then give Michelin kind of credibility. And I think, as Marco Pierre White once said to me in a film I made about this subject, you know, they sort of scatter them around like confetti. And I think that, for example, there's lots of strange anomalies. So last year, John Williams got a star for the food he's been cooking at the Ritz, okay? Now, John Williams has been cooking the same food there for a good 10 years, and it's been the same consistently day in, day out. So why has he just got a star last year? And why is the Ritz, which is as sort of smart and refined as you can get, why does it have one star, not two stars? You know, the wonderful Waterside Inn in Berkshire has 3 stars, but I think that people who are the sort of cutting edge of development and food and excellence and in terms of progression and trends would question some of the food they serve at the Waterside, even though the environment and the atmosphere is absolutely fantastic, and I love going there, and the food is wonderful. What is it that Marcus Waring has not done? You know, he's been working passionately to get 3 stars, you know, and they demoted him to 1. So if someone says, oh, maybe it's consistency and so on, I think he's as baffled and just disappointed as anyone else. The problem is there is no guide that's really sort of, you know, lapping at the feet, you know, nudging at it to sort of get Michelin out of the way, and people still dream of having a star. So I think that fundamentally it is less relevant these days. I mean, I didn't go out looking for stars. I want to have...
That's because you are a star, William. You don't have to look for stars. You just have to look in the mirror. You are a star. You know, why look for stars?
You're full of it.
I'm just getting caught up in the joys of the upcoming royal wedding. You know, I mean, what was more to love about that? You know,
it's going to be a deluge. They might get washed away.
Yeah, well, we are. Who knows what could actually happen? Probably the Almighty. William, it's been fantastic as ever, and we've just even scratched the surface of the whole sort of setups from that. As though bonding has just been re-emerged. Did you have a good birthday, by the way?
Yes, I was also hoping that my new child might arrive. It was due yesterday, but no sign of it. So hopefully when we talk next week, there might be another creature on the planet.
Whoa, this is just awesomeness personified. William, I take it you've had a reasonably interesting telephonic link.
It's been reasonable, it's been telephonic, it's been quite interesting.
That's what we like to hear, and you've already kind of answered the whole thing, because as you take up those postnatal exercises, the antenatal exercises, all of the sort of things, because we know actually as a male, it's you know, the women might do a certain amount of the effort, but you know, the stress that we go through, it's just quite frankly unbelievable. I'm speaking as somebody who has no children whatsoever, but there we are, that's by the by. William, we will return, enjoy those scrambled eggs, take care, speak next week.
Bye.
Many people tell you that they're your friend.
So we say thanks to Gabriella Peralta, Richard Fitzwilliams, Nick and Daniel from Bosch, of course, Kirsty from A Go Sober for October, and Justin Baines, and William Sitwell, and KGB Sheedy, and Rebecca from Road Safety, and Becky Morgan Phillips, and Ben Lewis. And thank you, dear listener, for the last hour and 36, 37 minutes. We're going to be out of here now as if we were carried on the wings of a dove or something. We'll leave you with a whole range of great music to take you up to the news at 10 o'clock. Later on today, of course, 5 o'clock, we've got Drive Time with Chris Clarkson, and then 7 o'clock, Royal Radio with Lauren Wood and Amelia Chambers. Great stuff. Becky, have you enjoyed your first ever breakfast show?
I have, yes, thank you very much.
Back again for the Midweek Drive next week and yes. The Great Morning Edition?
Yeah.
Excellent. Ben?
Yeah, I've very much enjoyed it, thank
That's
you.
That's it. What shall we say? We'll say scrambled eggs. 1, 2, 3.
Scrambled eggs.